Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Hello, my dark darlings. I'm Markia, and this is the Something Scary podcast. To our veteran listeners and those sheltering in the dark with us for the first time, welcome. At any time, we could think that we know exactly what's going on. What we see, what we hear, what we taste is the truth, is a fact. But sights and sounds can blind our judgment if they're under the control of sinister powers. Does a mask hide fangs? Can forces embed dangerous visions in our minds? Bright spotlights can hide many things behind them, leaving you delirious and wondering if it's all a real threat or just a morbid illusion. First, you can't escape the shape-shifting Yaksha. Next, an immersive audio journey into our third eye to trick our minds. And finally, we hear the true story behind Bright Like Knives with the writer, Ivan Salazar. I receive hundreds of creepy story submissions every single week. As always, the first story you hear is one that we've chosen to animate and post over at youtube.com/snarled. Then I read a few more stories for the podcast. If you have a tale you're dying to share, send me an email at somethingscary@snarled.com. And if you'd like to support the show and receive bonus content, consider joining our Patreon. Our patrons play a huge role in keeping the show running every single week. For more information on how you can help the show and also be a part of it, visit patreon.com/snarled. So, want to hear something scary?
The Shapeshifting Yaksha. There is a shape-shifting monster that roams abandoned houses and buildings. Be wary of buildings you enter. You may never come back. No one knows for sure where this monster is, but when you see it, you can't run, you can't scream, you can't even breathe. It paralyzes you. It is called the Yaksha. Ronan was bummed to be spending summer with his mom, Mindy, and her new boyfriend, Dev. It was Dev's suggestion that they stay at his family's beach resort in Goa, India. He boasted that it was better than any overhyped tourist destination. A palace by the sea for free was all he had to say to get Ronan's mom to agree to the trip. Much to Ronan's dismay, Dev picked him up from the airport alone. "Your mom's on a tour of the city," Dev explained. Ronan sighed. His mom had only been dating Dev for a few weeks, and now he was stuck spending quality bonding time with a guy he barely knew. His mom, Mindy, was head over heels for Dev, and while Ronan was still trying to adjust, he didn't blame her. His dad was currently on his honeymoon with his new wife in Hawaii. But as soon as they stepped foot on the resort, Ronan wished he had somehow tagged along to Hawaii with his dad. The hotel didn't live up to the hype that was originally promised. It was run down, bare, and a bit plain. As Dev smiled and motioned toward the building, a snake tattoo on his arm caught Ronan's eye. As he stared at it, weirdly enough, it almost looked like it was staring back. Like the snake eyes seemed to follow him. Ronan rubbed his eyes and shrugged it off as jet lag. His flight out of New Jersey had been long and full of bad plane food. Once inside, Ronan also noticed the place seemed unsettlingly empty. Seeing the look of confusion on Ronan's face, Dev explained that the hotel was undergoing renovations and it was technically closed to the public. Mindy and Ronan were accompanying him while he took care of the place during its off-season. Ronan rolled his eyes. "Hey, At least no one will hog the Wi-Fi, Dev offered. Before he could complain that the signal wasn't that great, Dev welcomed him with a tray of fresh seafood. It was as if it suddenly appeared. Ronan loved seafood, so he dug in, putting aside his grievances that he was stuck on Dev's work trip for the foreseeable future. We're staying in the Royal Suite, room 1367. Don't get lost. I'm going to go check the grounds, Dev said, leaving Ronan a key. Sitting alone, Ronan felt as if someone was watching him. He heard some crying off in the distance toward the halls. Apprehensive, Ronan followed the noise he was certain sounded like a little girl.
Beware the Yaksha,
he heard a voice as he made his way through the hall.
He took my mommy. He'll take yours too.
He saw a little girl run into the double doors ahead, followed by a loud splash. When he got closer, the door swung open and he saw a small body floating in the motel swimming pool. It was covered in snake bites. He blinked and the girl was gone. Spooked and wondering what a Yaksha was, Ronan tried to look it up on his phone, but only half the page loaded. The Yaksha, a spirit that devours travelers in abandoned places. Horrified, Ronan tried to call his mom, but there wasn't a signal. Was Dev a Yaksha? It was getting late, so maybe she was already in the room. If he could get to her, he could urge her to leave. He had a feeling that Dev wasn't to be trusted. He put the key into the door and barged into the room. Mom, we have to go. I think Dev isn't... A sharp hiss hit his ears, and there he saw Dev. His snake tattoo glowed green, and Ronan found himself completely unable to move. As he stood dumbfounded and paralyzed, his eyes adjusted to witness Dev for what he truly was. Before him towered a menacing serpentine figure with massive fangs. Dev was the Yaksha. Helplessly locked in the snake's green gaze, Ronan saw everything as he was slowly devoured whole. And then, darkness. Dev's phone rang as he bagged up the last of Ronan's belongings for disposal. He picked up the call from Ronan's mom as she asked him how Ronan was doing. Holding back a large burp, Dev replied, I'm sorry, love. Ronan decided on Hawaii after all and switched flights. But look on the bright side. It's just us now.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience. And they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Let's take a journey into the mind's eye. In this story submitted by Eoneth, we're invited to experience an audio psychological thriller. It always begins the same way. A slow-moving sensation crawling up my spine as I prepare for sleep. A sense of the shadows lengthening as they creep up along the walls. Tonight will bring the dream. I am certain. Exhaustion threatens to drag me away. I resist and try to stay awake. The pitter-patter of the rain on the windows seems sinister as I brew a cup of strong coffee. The full moon is high, and I shiver at what it reminds me of. I light the fireplace and read of adventure and war. I read, hour after hour, sitting in the most uncomfortable chair I own. Still, the moon is in the sky. It seems bigger now than it was. Closer. I turn a page. Lightning flashes past the window, and I close my eyes in surprise. I don't even hear the thunder before I am dragged asleep. I open my eyes. I find myself in a small room. No, not just a room, I realize. The wood-paneled floor sways from side to side. The sound of rain has been joined by the rhythmic clattering of wheels on tracks. A passenger train car, then. The colors here are bright and exaggerated, despite the dim light. The red of the carpet beneath my feet almost hurts my eyes to look at. I try to look out past a window framed by flickering gas lamps. I see nothing but the reflection of my own face. I turn away from it quickly. Something about my face was wrong, twisted. A sliding door blocks my way out of the small space. I unlatch it and step into the dark hallway outside. I emerge from the farthest room on the right. The dark here is far from natural. Gas lamps lay lit on the walls but do little to illuminate the narrow space I find myself in. I see three other doors, each identical to mine. No doubt they lead to other rooms. I approach one. I lift my hand to knock. I hear a whimper from the other side, punctuated by the sudden smell of rotting meat. I fail to suppress a wretch and stagger back. I approach another door. From behind it, hurried breaths and the insane muttering of a madman. I make my way quickly to the door that leads to the space between this car and the next. There is a window in the door, and I see my reflection in it again. Wrong. Wrong. My hands find the knob and pull open the door. The click-clack of the tracks increases in volume as I step outside. Rain falls onto my face, fat droplets that leave ice-cold streaks on my skin. I notice for the first time that I am wearing a coat. The darkness pools in the crevices of the corrugated metal floor like the rain. There are no stars. There are no clouds. There is nothing but the blood-red cratered surface of the moon. It hangs at an angle and seems to take up much more of the sky than it should. I look off the side of the train, at the tracks. They sit atop an artificial rise. The light from the moon glints off the metal of the tracks and casts the gravel they rest on a pale shade of red. I look farther out. Something laps against the grass that surrounds the rise, a thick, viscous liquid. The stuff has a sheen like oil, rainbows of impossible colors playing along its pitch black surface. It moves in ways I struggle to understand. It twists in on itself, parting and coming together like the vital fluid of a living nightmare. My head begins to hurt as I watch, and something warm trickles down onto my upper lip. I reach up. My nose is bleeding. I wipe the blood away and watch as the black liquid licks at a flower, smothering it. When it recedes, the flower and everything around it is gone, consumed. I look away, disturbed. A steel ladder to the roof of the train is bolted to the wall just to the left of the door into the next car. I am filled with an overwhelming urge to climb it. I fight against the urge, thrashing silently against my own body, but still I reach toward it. My hands grasp the metal bars. My arms drag me upward. My feet slip for a moment before finding purchase. I can feel my heart thumping in my chest. Finally, my fingers grasp at the slick roof and pull me up. The rushing wind bites through my soaked clothes and pulls my coat into the air behind me. The rain spatters on my face, and I raise an arm to block it. I see the moon more clearly here. It looks different, like the eye of some gigantic creature leaning down to watch the train. In the distance, there is a river. It cuts across the landscape like a festering wound. There is no water in the river. It is the source of the black liquid. A single bridge of stone and ironwork crosses the river, and the tracks pass over it. Past the bridge, there is nothing. An empty abyss. I look back up at the moon. As I stare up at the eye, I feel its presence. Something impossible. The eye focuses on me, and I freeze in a way that has nothing to do with the icy rain and wind. I can feel an all-consuming anger building into rage. The black liquid below circles into obscene whirlpools. My teeth chatter. A roar fills the air. But to call it a roar would be an inadequate description. It is more like a quake in the very fabric of reality. A maddening vibration runs through me, twisting my mind and body inside out. A scream tears itself from my throat, and my heart nearly bursts from my chest. Or these things should happen. They don't. I stand perfectly still as the terror runs through me. The roar subsides, and I climb down the ladder. Calmly, my body opens the door to the next car and steps through. The door closes behind me with a soft click that feels much louder than it is. Another passenger car. The same blood-red carpet, the same gas lamps, the same four doors. I look back through the window to the space between cars and I see nothing but darkness. The car I left is gone. Swallowed by shadow, I can only go forward. I take slow, careful steps. Moans of suffering and occasional bouts of hysterical laughter filter through the doors. The sounds all seem more muffled than I expect, different from the other passenger car I woke up in. The doors to my right and left have small windows in them. Curiosity suppresses my caution and I look through one. On the other side is a man, crouching down near the far wall. His back is to me and I can see him move his arm wildly. Then, in a flash of lightning, I see the symbols. Arcane designs of indiscernible origin decorate the walls and ceiling. They are scratched into the wood and tinged a rust red. The symbols seem to swim in my vision and feel like the visual equivalent of someone dragging nails across a chalkboard. In the faint light from the gas lamps within his room, I see that the man's finger, worn to the bone, is his writing implement. I stare. Enrapt. Despite my silence, the man turns abruptly to face me. His eyes are wild, and the rictus grin on his face breaks into a cacophony of hideous laughter. I start and crash into the opposite door. The window in it shatters, and a piece of glass cuts across the back of my hand. I barely notice. The other sounds in the car cease. For a moment, there is silence broken only by the clattering of the tracks and the drumming of the rain. Then I begin to hear the sound of rattling chains coming from the space the previous car once occupied. I make a dash for the door to the next divider between cars and pull it open. I'm assailed by the rain. I close the door behind me. Here, too, there is a ladder just to the left. Once again, I feel the overpowering urge to climb it to the roof. No, I do not wish to. I do not wish to see the eye. I do not want the eye to see me. My hands find the bars and my body begins to pull me upwards. Ahead lies the bridge. Closer now. Much closer. The black liquid is lapping against the tracks. It advanced in the time I spent in the car. It consumes the metal hungrily, removing entire chunks from existence. Somehow, the train stays its course instead of toppling into the deep. I look up, hoping against hope to find the sky empty. It is not. The blood-red eye stares down. It roars. My mouth drops open as my mind is ripped apart and put back together. When the roar ends, I stand on the roof of the train car, battered by the rain. I descend the ladder and open the door to the next car. A dining car. The smell of rot is strong here, and I cover my mouth and nose with my sleeve. There are four tables set, each with four places. Platters sit at the center of each table, some indescribable thing in each. Around the platters lie plates, silverware, and cloth napkins. Each of the implements is stained with the evidence of a meal. I pick my way forward as quickly as I dare. I do not wish to remain in this place. Whatever made a meal here must have been as monstrous as what they ate. Another door lies ahead. On the opposite side, the space between two train cars. I know I will find a ladder there. I know I will be compelled to climb it. I despair as I open the door. I despair as my feet carry me into the rain. I despair as I climb the ladder. I know I must look at the eye, but I fight to delay it as much as I can. My eyes wander along the landscape. The black fluid is even higher now, biting into the wheels of the train. The bridge is just ahead. The only thing untouched by the devouring darkness are... No, there is something else the liquid cannot eat away. Glinting in the damnable light of the red moon, I see chains. Each link the size of a small building, four anchors plunge into the river of shadow. From each comes four chains. They arc up, and I follow them to a shape, barely discernible. It looms above. It is a malformed impossibility, and my vision begins to swim as I see the eye. It strains against the chains that bind it. They creak, threatening to snap. They relax, and the creature roars this boundless fury. As I feel my body being torn apart by the roar, I wake up in my chair. The fire has died to ashes, and sunlight streams through the window. I shiver, and my book falls off my lap. As I reach down to pick it up, I notice the fresh cut on the back of my hand. The author of this story, Ioneth, worked with our story coordinator to bring the story to you, our Something Scary audience, in its entirety. You can find more work from this author at www.eoneth.com. We're constantly trying different things here at Something Scary. Would you be interested in a more moody and ASMR style type of horror? Let us know that and any SMR horror authors that you'd be interested in us working with. You can email us at somethingscary@snarled.com.
This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables Fruit Snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Captain Morgan Sliced. Since the dawn of bread, people have known the truth. Sliced is better. That's why new Captain Morgan Sliced went all in on four bold, deliciously sliced cocktail-style flavors. Pineapple Daiquiri, Strawberry Margarita, Mango Mai Tai, and Passion Fruit Hurricane. Visit CaptainMorgan.com to find Sliced near you. Does not contain real fruit or juice. Captain Morgan & Co., Plainfield, Illinois. Please drink responsibly. 21 plus only.
And we complete today's episode with our spooky story writer, Ivan Salazar, who shared with us the true story behind Bright Like Knives. You can see the video version of the story, Bright Like Knives, and also this interview on our channel, youtube.com/snarled.
Hey, my dark darlings. It's Markia with Something Scary. And today we're going to try something a little bit different. We heard you. From all the comments and everything, you are extremely interested in Bright Like Knives. We have the author here because, you know, it was based on a true story. So we are going to talk with Ivan Salazar. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you guys for inviting me to be able to talk with you.
Yeah, well, we're curious. Everybody wants to know. So first off, How about you tell us a little bit about you? Like, what do you do in your normal, not scaring us to death?
Yeah. So I work in like comics and manga, like specifically I'm the senior marketing director for Kodansha USA Publishing. So Kodansha is like one of the manga publishers that will publish stuff like Akira, Sailor Moon, Cardcaptor Sakura, like stuff like that. And like there's also like a range of other stuff we publish. It's just like those are some of the most like well-known. Attack on Titan is one of the, you know, things we publish. On my day-to-day job, I just do marketing for them. So, you know, anything that helps promote the publisher, like the books that we have coming out, and just, you know, us in general, like I help out with. It's what I'm gonna do on my day job.
Excellent. Yeah. A lot of our audience is also huge anime fans. So I have an Attack on Titan. So Ivan, this was the first story that you've written for us for Something Scary. It will not be the last one because it was just, it was that great.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. But a lot of our stories are user submitted, but this particular story, Bright Like Knives, it is based on a true story. So we would love to know, inquiring minds want to know.
What's it called? I hope this doesn't like break any of the mysticism or like the mystery about it. Like I'm not actually in jail, or did not go to jail for the murder of my friend Denny. A lot of the framework of it was pretty much the same. Like, so what it was is like I really did go with my friend Dennis, who I changed to Denny, through a 12-hour karaoke session, which was kind of like intense, and also like a lot of like odd stuff started happening. Like I am a fan of certain mystical things. Like I like tarot. I think that there is something interesting in the concept of magic, and whatever that means is whatever it means to the individual, really. And I had this idea at some point that karaoke in itself is a kind of magic. Like you dawn on the song of another artist, and you basically become them for like 3 minutes at a time. And I think it's like it's a fun distraction. B, if you like really like an artist, I think that there's an interesting way to connect with them. C, like just like feeling the music and then just like getting lost in it is like this really interesting headspace to just like, you know, when certain like, you know, people who do magic or like meditation and stuff that talk about the idea of like just sort of like letting go. I feel like karaoke does that, and sometimes for me. And after 12 hours of doing that, things started getting a little weird. Just a lot of like
way creepy.
So we did it across three venues, which is in the story. And the first venue ended up like working great. Like everything went off without a hitch. There's no confusion amongst who was gonna singing. Perfect time. The second time, if you've ever seen the Looney Tunes episode where these little like gremlins are breaking apart a ship, like an airplane that Bugs is trying to fly, it felt like those aerial gremlins were like manning a karaoke machine. So you would often get like wrong people going up, misnamed people, or songs just like messing up in the middle of it. And I was like, okay, these are fun curveballs that the universe is throwing at us, but we'll figure it out. There was one point where I had put in a Beatles song, and I guess somebody named Ivy was my name's Ivan. The announcers at some point are like, Ivy, Ivan. And I was like, oh, okay, that's weird. I felt like I went up recently, but you know, whatever, that's fine. And as I was passing, I was like, hey, like I did a Beatles song. Like, is that what that is? Like, yeah, that's what it is. And so I went up, and it was not the right one. And what the song was Hey Jude, which it's like, I don't know, like an 8 minute song, but like 6 minutes of it are improvised Hey Jude. And there's no like actual lyrics that you could follow. It's just, you know, make it up. And so I was like, hey, this isn't my song. It's like, oh, I think there's an actual Ivy, because I see your name here, Ivan, like a few songs down. And I was like, oh man, I never want to do this karaoke song because I know the 6 minutes that you have to like just like slog through. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should step down. And because this was the Gauntlet, Dennis yelled out, no, Gauntlet, stay up and do the song. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that is what we signed up for. Okay, let's do this. And so I did the song, and once I hit to the 6 minutes of like just improvise Hey Jude, I had no real plan, and I just sort of like let go and just try to improvise as much. Like I'm a big fan of the Beatles and like heard their songs several times over, and knowing the general structure of the song and just being like, okay, if I do this in this way and this is how the song goes, it'll sound right. And then at some point it just like stopped being me. Like I stopped thinking about it and just did it, whatever felt natural. And there are times like that, that I always talk about the idea of touching the infinite. Like it's a Stephen King idea from like It, where you essentially like go beyond your consciousness and are now touching something else. And you know, it's funny because like some writers would actually consider that it's called like the flow, like when you have like all the ideas popping and stuff like that, it doesn't feel like you're writing as much as it is like a story flowing through you. And there are similar, like I wouldn't have had that experience if not for the weird like curveballs that like the universe was throwing at us. And then so, you know
what it sounds like to me then is you and Dennis,
yeah.
You went through 12 hours of karaoke, but with the experience that it is for you, you stopped being yourself, and it sounds like you let the other world kind of steer the both of you in the direction that you need it to do, that it needed for you to go in. It kind of makes me feel like these creepy occurrences that were happening to you were steering you towards this ultimate, you know, this ultimate confrontation.
Yeah.
With her. Can you tell us?
Of course. Yeah. It in those like instances, you know, and this was in like a earlier version of the story, I talk about the idea of knocking on the door of the universe. And it felt like those 12 hours were kind of that in a way that we weren't expecting. So when something knocked back, that's kind of what happened on the road. Like we'd finish and we're like both pretty tired. And like, I knew that there was like a Denny's nearby. And so I was like, hey, you want to grab some food? I know a place. He's like, yeah, sure. Well, and it really was.
Right?
Yeah. No, no, this was actually in Los Angeles.
Oh, this is Los Angeles.
Okay, great. Yeah. Which is why like it was weird that I was just thinking about the day, listening to a playlist of like, I try to keep track of all the songs that I sing and put in a playlist like throughout the day. And so I was just like playing that in the car as the GPS was telling me to turn here and there and stuff like that. I was sort of just zoning out and paying attention to where I was supposed to make turns. And at some point I did hit a stretch road that like, although like I lived in this part of LA for like just like 3 years at this point, this was like super unfamiliar, like a super unfamiliar road. And I didn't understand that. I was like, wait, where am I? Like, I thought I knew the different places around it, but because it was dark and because I'd never, you know, driven around this area at like 2 a.m. at night, I was just like, oh, okay, this is weird. But yeah, I think I know where I am. But yeah, like in the story, it was like sparsely lit and chatting with Dennis. And then like a mile down the road, I start seeing like this, like basically like this body, like moving like across the road. And it really did have like a weird look and feel. Like it was moving very slowly, it was kind of shuffling, and the closer I got, like I did see that they were like doing some like weird arm motions, and like the walking didn't quite look right. And where like the story is real up until is like really just on the drive, on the road, seeing the person. And it really was this thing where I wasn't exactly sure what I was looking at when the lights like came on it, or like, you know, on the person, like looked like a normal person. And they had their back facing to us. And once the light hit them, they did that pirouette turn. And really on their face was this giant smile. And I always tell people, like, in terms of like the real life thing, that like it felt like it could have been a trick of the light or just my imagination, but I did see like almost completely black eyes. And it like once I saw that, I was like, all right, we're out of here. Like, Dennis was like, you know, I don't know what that is, but we need to get away right now. And I'm like, oh hell yeah, we're gone, we are gone. And I just like, you know, sped away, because like, you know, I am a fan of the supernatural, and you know, I've grown up with like ghost stories my entire life, and it's one of those situations that felt like there was something out there reaching, and I did not want to know what it was. And yeah, when we got to Denny's, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I asked Dennis, like, yo, like, what did you see? And he actually ended up like drawing this. Dennis is a comic book artist and writer, and he ended up like drawing this depiction on like a Denny's placemat using my pen. And like, you know, he confirmed the giant smile, and then like when he did the eyes, they were like full black, and it's just like they're like black eyes, weren't they? And I was just like, yeah, that was what happened. And like it's almost like I couldn't quite believe it until like somebody else confirmed it. But yeah, every now and then, like, you know, in one of the original versions of the story, like I mentioned that like every now and then I like look behind in the rearview mirror to see if like I happen to catch, you know, that thing again. But what was kind of wild is that while I was writing the first draft of the story, I ended up like going to like some place to like write. I don't know, sometimes writing in public feels pretentious, I'm sure, I'm hearing on the internet, but like I don't know, it's a nice way to tune out the world, have a change of scenery than being locked up in your home. But I was running a draft, and then it was in this place called The Block in downtown LA that has this parking structure which is pretty ridiculous. It's this giant spiral that is meant for cars. It's not meant for people to walk up. So when I was finishing up the first draft, I was like, okay, it's getting pretty late. I think I could stop here. I'll go home. I started driving down the spiral, and halfway down, there was a person walking up it. And I thought was weird enough. And then like when I tried to like look at them, they had their hand over their face, and they were like sort of shuffling back and forth like this. And I was like, okay, this is super weird. And the sad truth about it is that Los Angeles has an intense like homeless population, and some of those people like suffer from like mental illnesses, and it could like easily be explained that it was somebody who gotten lost, disoriented, and like now is just trying to, you know, make their way somewhere.
Or it could be that being coming back to try to open the door that you knocked on.
Yeah, I like that. It's just the coincidence of everything that just felt like very like, okay, this whenever I see things like that happen in succession, it's like I feel like I'm on the right path. Although being on the right path of like something scary is like a little bit like different. Like, oh no, I don't want to see too many scary things while I'm doing this thing. Yeah, so that was the whole thing. And I, you know, I still think that it was a pretty creepy experience. And like, you know, I've never seen a ghost. I've had some experiences, but like, this is probably one of the realest things that was just like, oh no, like, you know, one of the things that I talked about in an earlier version was the idea that like, you know, once you see it, it sees you. Like whatever the universe is, whatever the is across the veil, like you become on the, you know, the radar of this thing. It's like, oh, now we can interact with you in different ways. I hope you're ready for that.
Oh man, if there's anything to say exactly what that feeling is, where it's just like a lot of people go through life wanting to see ghosts. Like they want to be touched by the other world, by the supernatural, not really realizing that once you are, that door is open.
Yes.
And then you have to deal with that next phase of your life of being aware.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize how good it is to not have that door open.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're like the Hollywood version of it is in Constantine, like the movie with Keanu Reeves, when he tells you the origin of like him as a kid, like seeing those things, like it is done in a very scary fashion where, like, you know, once he finally saw and accepted that he was seeing these spirits, like they just would not stop bugging him, and like in scarier and scarier fashions. Now, although that in some cases isn't that intense, I think that, you know, once you cross that threshold, if you go to certain places or do certain things that involve the spiritual and the supernatural, I think you become more of an antenna that, you know, it can gravitate towards. So don't be surprised when, you know, spooky things start happening in your home or in your life.
Yeah. You evolve with it. It's just you. Yeah. Put more tools in your toolkit then, you know. Yeah. Once that door is open, and some people are born with that door open, others open that door without even realizing what they're doing. And mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's life on the other side of that. And every yeah. way that I mean that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So with you, Ivan, so now that this door has been open, I hope you're going to use this doorway to give us some more stories from your perspective. Is there anything else that you would like for us to know about or to plug?
Our audience? Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Since we're talking about like sort of like real ghost stories, like I use the quotation marks because I did take some, you know, artistic license with the ending of the story, which, you know, was again, like wonderful edits by your team. Like, I was like, you know, your audience, you know what they want. I was like, yeah, I think I can do this. I can figure it out and still make it like a cool story. So in the vein of real ghost stories, there's a manga that we actually publish with Kodansha. It's called PTSD Radio, that if you're a fan of Stephen King's It or Junji Ito's Uzumaki, like it is this kind of like short burst horror story anthology where all these stories feel like intertwined into like a greater horror, but you don't quite know what it is. You're just sort of like going through all these like creepy tales that feel like they're loosely related. And I think in general, it's like a pretty good horror manga. There's 6 volumes out, but what's neat is that at volumes 5 and 6, the author takes the last like few chapters to talk about this like real life ghost story that happened to him and how his health was actually affected because he tried to recount a scary encounter that happened to him in one of his like studios that he rented for him and his assistants, that he had found what he thought was like a broken piece of a temple. Like it was sort of like bundled up in like wax paper and twine and stuff, and he had kind of disturbed it. It was like in an empty room in the studio that he had rented, and that a bunch of weird stuff started happening to him, like always hearing like noises, weird smells. At some point in one of the other unoccupied studio spaces, there were these panels missing, like on the floor. Like imagine if there were like square tiles, like there would be like these squares missing. And that, like, this was on the bottom floor, so you could see in, but you couldn't really see. It was just like black. And that one of his assistants is like, "Oh, you know, I heard you found something spooky in like one of the empty rooms downstairs. Maybe I'm going to check it out before I leave." And they're like, "That's not a good idea." It's like, it'll be fine." And that the manga artist got a call the next day from the assistant saying, "I can't go back to that space. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to look for another job." Yeah. the craziest thing that happened to him is that when he tried to write a story recounting the scary thing that happened to him after he had disturbed that piece of the broken temple, is that suddenly his mouth started to get all these like blood boils, and his skin started to like get irritated, and he went to the doctors to be like, "What is happening to me?" And after taking some blood tests, they were basically saying that like your white blood cells are essentially killing your red blood cells, and we can't figure out why. So, you know, he started like going back to like, you know, what is happening, what's the thing? And he's like, "Wait, I just did a story that had these little monsters that were like coming out of this person's mouth. I think that's related. And then he realized that anytime that he tried to talk about that story and that happenstance, that weird things would happen. Like, some people would have no real recollection of it. Like, it happened to them. Like, they were there, and like, they, as hard as they tried, they couldn't remember it. Or once they did remember it, like, they just start feeling bad. And so he thought, oh, maybe I'm not supposed to tell what happened. And so he went back and revised this story to be like this piece, like, because of certain circumstances, I cannot say what happened. And then he tells the rest of it. So he tells the lead up to it and the aftermath, but not the actual incident. And this, like, this feels like a very real thing that happened to the manga creator, which I think is like, was one of the scariest things that I had read, because it was just like, oh, like, this actually happened. Like, you know, comics has like Grant Morrison, where he talks about something bad happened to him while writing The Invisibles, and he thinks that it was tied to the actual writing of the story. This is what that felt like, that something terrible was happening to this manga artist because he was being silenced from telling this like particular event. So the series itself is pretty creepy on its own, but then when I got to that point, I was like, oh man, this is insane.
I'm definitely interested. I know our audience will most definitely check out your horror manga PTSD Radio, because that is insane.
It is super cool. Like, the art is really neat, and like, the manga artist has a really good sense of what looks creepy on the page. So I think horror fans will definitely like this series.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, do you want anybody to reach out to you on social media? Do you want to?
Sure. It's at Salazar, but spelled S-A-L-A-C as in cat, Z-A-R, like a Russian czar. And I'm that pretty much everywhere, like Facebook, or not Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Okay, awesome. Ivan, thanks so much for scaring the crap out of us.
Yeah, no worries.
Love it, want more of it. and we'll hopefully have an interview with you again after one of your next stories you'll do for us.
Whenever. Happy to do it.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Marco.
This week's podcast stories were edited by Ianith, Sabina Graves, and Markia McCarty. Narration by Markia McCarty. Audio edited by Fitz Harris. Graphics by Johnny Ashley. Produced by Annalise Nelson. Music by Sapphire Sandalo. If you have a story you'd like to submit, send me an email at somethingscary@snarl.com. Don't forget to watch the video version of Something Scary over at youtube.com/snarled. And if you'd like to support the show and everything we do at Snarled, join our Patreon at patreon.com/snarled. Until next time, my dark darlings, sweet dreams.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.